Good morning. Today I'm going to talk about grammar. We all know what intuitively grammar is. Well, it is a set of rules for language that governs sounds, words, sentences, and other elements, and also their combinations and interpretation. It also denotes the study of some abstract features or a set of rules that govern the use of language. In this restricted sense, therefore, the term refers only to the study of sentence and word structure, that is, syntax and morphology, and excludes vocabulary and pronunciation. The concepts of grammar is not a contemporary one. There have been historically previous elements and thinkers who have talked about grammar. In fact, grammar is one of the more traditional of the subjects, both in ancient India and China, as well as in Rome and Greece. So we look at the common contemporary definition of grammar as the underlying structure of a language that has evolved through the ages into a systematic description of the features of the language. This also includes the study of phonology or the sound, the study of word formation or morphology, the study of patterns and word arrangements, that is syntax, and that of meaning, that is semantics. It depends on the grammarian's approach to either set it up as a prescriptive or descriptive grammar. A prescriptive grammar provides rules for correct usage, while descriptive grammar describes how a language is actually used. Or it could be slated to be a generative grammar, that is, a grammar that provides instructions for the production of an infinite number of sentences and the comprehension of an infinite number of sentences in a language. The traditional focus of inquiry, however, has been on morphology and syntax, and for only some contemporary linguists and some traditional grammarians, this is the only proper domain of the subject. So let us look at the ancient and medieval grammars. In Europe, the Greeks were the first to write grammars. To them, the grammar was a tool that could be used to study Greek literature, hence their focus on the literary language. It was the Alexandrians of the first century BC who further developed Greek grammar in order to preserve the unity and purity of the language. Dionysius Thrax of Alexandria wrote an influential treatise called The Art of Grammar, in which he analyzed literary texts in the form of letters, syllables, and what is now familiar as the eight parts of speech. The Romans adopted the similar grammatical system of the Greeks and applied it to Latin. Except for Varro, who is from the first century BC, who believed that grammarians should discover structures, not dictate them, most Latin grammarians did not attempt to alter the Greek system and also sought to protect their language from decay. The model for the Greeks and Alexandrians were the language of Homer, the works of Cicero and Virgil, set to the Latin standard. Later, in the 4th century AD, Donatus, and in 6th century AD, Priscian are the foremost important Latin grammarians, and they used widely to teach Latin grammar during the European Middle Ages. The grammarians of the mid-13th to 14th century reviewed language as a reflection of reality, looked to philosophy for explanations of grammatical rules, and sought one universal grammar that would serve as a means of understanding the nature of being. In the 17th century France, a group of grammarians from Port-Royal were also interested in the idea of universal grammar. They claimed that the common elements of thought could be understood in grammatical categories of all languages. Unlike their Greek and Latin counterparts, however, the Port Royal grammarians did not study literary language, but claimed instead that usage should be dictated by actual speech of living languages. Modern and contemporary grammars start from 1700, and they are best used for written language primarily for the purposes of reforming, purifying, or standardizing language, and were put to pedagogical use. That means they were used for teaching. The rules of grammar usually accounted for formal, written, and literary language only, and did not apply to all varieties of the actual spoken language perspective. This idea or approach dominated the schools and the universities, where the study of grammar became associated with parsing of the sentence and making sentence diagrams. This continued well into the middle decades of the 20th century. The simplification of grammar for classroom use contrasted sharply with the complex studies of the scholars of linguistics who were conducting studies about languages. During the 19th and early 20th century, the historical viewpoint of this kind of grammars flourished. Scholars who tried to realize, or rather realize, that every living language was in a constant state of flux, studied all types of written records of modern European languages to determine the courses of their evolution. This led to the study of philology and comparative philology. The historical grammarians who studied historical linguistics did not follow earlier prescriptive approaches, but were interested instead in discovering where the language came from. As a result of this work of the historical grammarians, scholars came to see the study of language can either be a diachronic, that is a movement through time, or synchronic, that is its state at a particular time instant. Ferdinand de Saussure, the Swiss linguist, and other descriptive linguists began studying the spoken language and collected a large sample of sentences that were produced by native speakers of language and classified their material, starting with the phonology and working their way up to the syntactic levels. In the 20th century, the generative or transformational grammars gained currency. Noam Chomsky, who is one of the legends of linguistics, studied the knowledge that native speakers bring and possess, which enables them to produce and understand an infinite number of sentences. He attempted to describe those rules and define the native speaker's competence, that is, the unconscious knowledge of the language, and account for all the instances of the speaker's performances, that is, strategies and actual use that the individual uses in an actual sentence production. The study of grammatical theory has been of interest to philosophers, anthropologists, psychologists, neuroscientists, and literary critics over the centuries. Today, grammar exists as a field within linguistics, but still retains a relationship with all these other disciplines. No study of grammar can be complete without a reference to Panini. Panini, who is variously dated as living between the 4th century BC to 6th century BC, was an ancient Sanskrit philologist, grammarian, and a revered scholar in ancient India. Many consider him the true father of linguistics after the discovery and publication of Panini's work by the 19th century European scholars, and his influence on aspects of development of modern linguistics is widely recognized by the experts. His grammar was influential on foundational scholars such as Ferdinand de Saussure and Leonard Bloomfield. In fact, many consider his seminal text Ashtadhyayi, which is a sutra-style treatise on Sanskrit grammar, spoken Sanskrit grammar, with 3,959 verses or rules of linguistic syntax and semantics divided into 8 chapters, as the foundational text for Vyakaran, which is the branch of Vedanga, the auxiliary scholarly disciplines of the Vedic period, and is also considered to be the base from which Greek grammarians got the idea of how to categorize their grammar. Later commentaries or bhashyas like Patanjali's Mahabhashya is the most famous of the Hindu traditions. All these ideas then go on to influence and attract commentaries from scholars from other Indian religions like Buddhists, and Panini's analysis of noun compounds and verb compounds are stated to be the most comprehensive and scientific theory of grammar and is conventionally taken to be the mark of the start of the classical Sanskrit period. Panini's theory of morphological analysis through his Shiva Sutras, the siglas of the phonological categories and aksharas was more advanced than any equivalent Western theory before the advent of the 20th century. Even now, his treatise is considered to be generative and descriptive, uses meta-language and meta-rules, and has been compared to an ancient Indian Turing machine, wherein the logical structure of any computing device has been reduced to its essentials using an idealized mathematical model. Ashtadhyayi actually deserves special mention because it is a central part of Panini's grammar and by far the most complex one. The text of Ashtadhyayi is the oldest linguistic and grammar text of Sanskrit surviving in its entirety, and Panini refers to older texts and authors such as Unadi Sutra, Dhatupatha, Ganapatha, some of which have only survived in parts. It also complements the Vedic ancillary sciences such as the Niruktas, the Nighantus, and the Shiksha texts. Nirukta and Nighantu are dictionaries and etymologies, and Shiksha refers to the texts of phonetics. So Ashtadhyayi is regarded as extremely compact without sacrificing the completeness of the description, and it would become the model for later specialist texts or sutras. In the Ashtadhyayi, language is observed in a manner that has no parallel among Greek or Latin grammarians. It became the foundational text of the Vyakaran. However, we must be careful about trying to understand the direct influence of Panini on the later day grammarians in the 20th century. Although, say for example, the founding father of modern linguistics, that is Ferdinand de Saussure, has referred to his work in some of the lectures, and has in general been quite familiar with these texts. His memoir on the original system of vowels in the Indo-European languages, which was published in 1879, he mentions that Indian grammar has an influence on his idea that represents some kind of imperfective in the verbal class. However, Professor George Cardona from Chicago has warned against overestimating the influence of Panini on modern linguists. He says that although Saussure has also refers to his predecessors who had taken this Paninian rule into account, it is reasonable to conclude that he had a direct acquaintance with Panini's work. As far as I am able to discern upon rereading Saussure's memoir, however, it shows no direct influence of Paninian grammar. Indeed, on occasion, Saussure follows a path that is contrary to Paninian procedure, unquote. However, we can see that Panini's grammar, being the world's first formal system, developed well before the 19th century innovations of Frege and the subsequent development of mathematical logic. Panini, in his grammar, used the method of auxiliary symbols in which new affixes were designated to mark syntactic categories and control of grammatical derivations. This kind of technique was rediscovered by Emil Post and became the standard method for the design of computer programming languages later. It definitely holds a pride of place in the study of linguistics and has to be taken to be one of the great innovations made by Indian grammarians of antiquity. With this, I come to the conclusion of this lecture on grammar. Thank you.